From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. It has been another busy week in Georgia politics. Governor Brian Kemp has just announced his intention to seek a Medicaid waiver from the federal government. Meanwhile, legislators are a quarter of the way through the session, tackling issues ranging from the $27.5 billion budget to offshore drilling and its effect on the coast.
We need to do what we can to protect this wildlife in our ocean. So I'm against it. And if we need it one day, that's another thing.
Joining me in the studio for our weekly recap is GPB politics reporter Stephen Fowler. He's got his bow tie on. Good morning.
Good morning. You can hear it through the radio.
You can hear it through the radio. Stephen, 10 legislative days have passed so far, 40 in total. You explained the strange math of days to us last week. House Speaker David Ralston said yesterday that if this were a football game, we'd be ending the first quarter. So what's the score?
Well, it's kind of like the Super Bowl on Sunday because not much has really happened on paper or really in practicality. So in the House, they've done some things to add some circuit court judges. There have been people honored, the doctor of the days come up, different things like that. But no substantial legislation has made it through. In the Senate, they did pass yesterday this school bus bill, which we'll talk about a little later, that'll close a loophole for when you could pass a school bus with its lights on. And the budget has been presented. It's $27.5 billion, which includes things like a teacher pay increase, state employee pay increase, and a voting machine money to pay for updating Georgia's system.
So where are we with the budget process?
Well, there are different subcommittees that have been meeting to kind of parse out line by line their relevant sections of the budget. We should have sometime maybe this week or next week a vote on what's called the little budget, which is the amended budget that runs until July. And then at some point they have to pass the big budget, which is July 1st of this year to June 30th of next year.
Okay, so all that is churning through. One thing that did make it through is the proposal to name the judicial center that's being built downtown in Atlanta after former Governor Nathan Deal. Here is House Speaker David Ralston introducing it to the Rules Committee.
I bring before you today House Resolution 1, very simple resolution that will, as all of you know, in I think August, we will open the new judicial center down the street, a facility that's long overdue and resulted from the leadership of Governor Deal.
Now, one of the hallmarks of Governor Deal's tenure was criminal justice reform. So proponents thought that naming the building after him would be pretty much a shoo-in. Was that the case?
Well, yes and no. It did pass overwhelmingly, but not unanimously. There were two no votes in the House. One was Representative Matt Gertler, who always does stuff like this. He was the one no vote on Hurricane Michael funding and things in the special session. But a new freshman, Representative Moore, also voted no. And so, you know, it was one of those things that it's not really, it's a ceremonial vote more than anything. But what's significant about those two no votes is that there's a certain bill in the House that would provide constitutional carry, which means that people, their right to carry firearms and everything is provided by the Constitution. The first two signers on that bill, Representative Gertler and Representative Moore. So you can basically kiss that bill goodbye this session.
Okay, well, that's one. And the House and Senate have set the calendar for the rest of the legislative session. They're meeting virtually every day until April the 2nd. So it's pretty much a breakneck pace. What does that mean for the process of bills that are becoming law?
Well, for one, it means that I'm going to be very, very busy coming in here and talking about what's going on. But it's like a Beastie Boys song that I like, but instead of no sleep till Brooklyn, there's no breaks till April. So what that means on one hand is that it'll be a lot easier for things to slip by, you know, reading dozens of bills, voting on dozens of bills, things going forward. One day bleeds into the next one. Maybe easier for somebody to slip something in or pass a, you know, what's called like a placeholder bill that has a few lines of text that then they pass the bill. And then later on, once it gets later in the session, they'll substitute a completely new bill in. And because it already passed one chamber, it's easy to go through. But it could also mean, I'm hopeful, it could mean that there's a steady pace and momentum of bills being passed and discussed and voted on. And so we're not there on the last day of the session until 11:59 p.m. trying to just vote on numbers and things like that. Crossover Day is March 7th, and that's the day at which a bill has to pass either the House or the Senate to be considered for the rest of the session. So expect the end of February, beginning of March, to kind of be off the chain of trying to negotiate and get things through.
So there are these committee work days. Why are they on the calendar?
Well, the work days are important because after crossover day, you know, the House passes a bill and then it goes over to the Senate. And the Senate may have their own version of the bill that they did or did not pass. And so these are days dedicated to sitting down and hashing out these differences because the House may want $5 for something and the Senate may want $3. And then they have to figure out whose version gets to go to the governor. So these are important work days. It's a sign from leadership of we've got to get stuff done, and it's going to be important, but that means there's going to be, you know, 10, 15 different committee meetings going on at once, all hearing important bills.
So it's tough to report on what's going on inside of the committees until things actually get to the floor. How do you get a beat on that?
Well, you know, the committees do post their agendas online of the bills that they're going to talk about. Usually it's just the bill number, so you have to know what the bill number is and what the bill is actually for. And, you know, because members are on multiple committees at once, you know, you're not going to have every single major bill in the world being heard at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. So it's important to kind of follow the committee players and the committee chairman and figure out what bills are happening to be able to know what's going ahead. Also, you know, there are a ton of lobbyists that hang around the Capitol waiting and getting messages. So if you see 500 people in one committee meeting room and five in the other, that's pretty much a good sign that there's something going on.
How about aside from listening to you and checking in with you, how can we as Georgians really keep tabs on the lawmakers?
So the House and the Senate do a really great job of updating things on their website. You can find all the bills there. You can find the status of whether they've been voted on, what committee they've been assigned to. You can watch all of the committee live streams. So if you really, really want to know what's happening in the Public Safety Committee next Friday, there's a live stream for that. So it's really, really accessible once you know where to look to find all of these things. And I think one way for the audience and the listeners to not be surprised if they pass a bill or do something like that, it's all there, and it's there for the taking and there for the looking at. But it is a bit overwhelming with, you know, several hundred legislators, several hundred bills, things like that.
I'm speaking with GPB politics reporter Stephen Fowler, who likes to keep his eye on these kind of things. not everybody has that predilection. He's covering the State House and Senate during the legislative session, giving us regular updates of all things politic. This week, members of the Coastal Delegation held a press conference announcing two resolutions related to offshore drilling. Here is Republican Representative Don Hogan of St. Simons.
Our fishery industry depends on our coastal Georgia. The shrimping industry depends on us. The oyster industry depends on us.
Okay, so what does this pair of bills hope to accomplish?
So that was actually Democratic Senator Lester Jackson of Savannah. I got my offshore drilling clips mixed up there. But, you know, these pairs of resolutions aim to say that Georgia should be off limits when it comes to offshore drilling. Last year, the federal government opened things up on the Atlantic coast for drilling and exploration of drilling. But what you have is a bipartisan group of lawmakers from the coast and Atlanta and the mountains and everything saying that Georgia's coastal economy does not need offshore drilling and does not need these environmental impacts. And this resolution not just bans offshore drilling, but would require, like, even the testing for it, kind of the precursors of finding out if there's oil there. They say they don't even want that because of the negative effects it has on the environment. And Governor Kemp himself has said that he would fight this if need be to protect Georgia's coastlands. So it seems to be something that everyone's in agreement on.
Well, is that characteristic of Georgia lawmakers taking a stand for environment over business interests?
Well, I guess it depends. You know, a lot of people, as they mentioned in the press conference, you know, representatives said, you know, people vacation down there, people work down there, people live down there. So it's not just this abstract, you know, environmental thing of, oh, there's a rig 100 miles off from the coastline, and whatever people want to do, you know, it's got real environmental effects. And the coastline of Georgia, even though there's about 100 or so miles of it, a lot of people have a lot of strong feelings about it. And so this, I think, is an example of the environmental impact coming together and people, you know, coming together regardless of party to support something that they believe in.
Are we seeing other bipartisan pushes under the dome?
Well, I sure hope so. But what we have seen this session so far is, you know, maybe a bit tamer than what some people were anticipating after the bitter gubernatorial race and some of the other races. You know, somebody said that maybe the controversial bills were being held until after the Super Bowl and people stopped paying attention to Atlanta and Georgia. But, you know, some representatives and some senators are going to file things because they file things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going anywhere. But what you have seen is this increasing bipartisan push. You have in the Senate, you've had the issues with the women's issues and the Equal Rights Amendment come up, and you have this voting machine and voting security thing push that are coming from both sides trying to do things. So I think this first session, as people try to get settled with their grooves and settled with their alliances, you're seeing a lot more cooperation and kind of passive lawmaking as opposed to fireworks all the time.
Well, a big announcement that could start some fireworks from Governor Kemp last night. He says he's going to seek a federal Medicare waiver. Now, of course, heard rumblings about this kind of thing in the past. Many conservatives have remained against Medicaid expansion. What is he planning?
Well, so the bottom line, I think what both sides would agree is that some sort of plan like this wants to have more Georgians with more access to health care. And what that exactly looks like will be the political sticking point. In the governor's budget, he set aside $1 million for a consultant to explore the different waivers that are out there. And this is a waiver from the Affordable Care Act, from Obamacare, from these federal guidelines, kind of for Georgia to create its own pathway to ensuring more people. Now, Democrats believe that Medicaid expansion is the way to ensure more people and to expand what's already working. But Republicans say that Medicaid expansion in small amounts may be the solution, but they worry what happens if the federal government one day might not meet its commitment, and then the state is responsible for paying for all of that health care. So Governor Kemp next week is going to make some sort of announcement and big rollout and push, and I think he's going to have a listening tour of things. So this is something that lawmakers are taking seriously, but what the final product looks like remains to be seen.
All right. So you mentioned the Senate did pass one bill this week that undoes part of a change enacted last session specifying when it is legal to pass a school bus. Here's the bill's author, Republican Senator Bill Heath of Bremen, speaking about last year's mix-up.
The bill, House Bill 978, caused a problem that has put a lot of our children, our school age children, at risk in Georgia.
So what does this mean for safety of school children?
Well, so basically, last year, they passed a law that said that you can drive past the school bus with a stop arm out if you're on the other side of a road that's kind of divided either by a strip of grass or a concrete barrier, or a turn lane, either a reversible turn lane or another turn lane. And then lawmakers realized, and they heard from teachers and bus drivers and everything like that, that a turn lane isn't an actual physical barrier to keep cars from being out of the way. And if somebody's got to cross the street, there's no safe way to do it. So this was a way of kind of listening to feedback and kind of closing that gap to make it safer for children and school bus drivers. Because believe it or not, Virginia, there's still a lot of people that drive around school buses when there are children getting off in the arms there. So this clarifies that to keep children safe.
Well, Stephen Fowler, thank you so much for speaking with us. Next week, we will be speaking with you from Savannah. We will be at the Book Festival. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, how the music of worship became the devil's music. Well, that's at least what early critics of rock and roll feared. I'm Virginia Prescott. We'll hear more about that when On Second Thought continues.